It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. Got a loaded show for you here today. We're going to have former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington join us at 7:30. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joins us at 9 o'clock. And then Jamie Watson will join us at 9:30 to break down Nashville SC's big playoff match tonight against Toronto. So a lot to look forward to here in the show. And Joe, I was bored last night, and I got on Twitter, which is usually a horrible combination, but anytime I can talk about Tennessee Vols football, I usually take the chance to do so. So I pulled out a poll question last night at rstanleynhl on Twitter. Vols fans, where are you at with Jeremy Pruitt and this football program? What should Tennessee do after this season? 527 votes in this poll question. 47% say Pruitt needs to be fired. 44% say Pruitt needs more time, and then 9% say Pruitt is the guy, which I feel like the 9% that are saying Pruitt is the guy, like they've got to be like Vandy fans and Bama fans, right? Like there's no Tennessee fan saying, oh yeah, Pruitt's the guy.
I don't know. Are you sure?
I don't know.
Yeah, it may be opposing fans trolling. That's always a possibility.
Maybe like Pruitt got on there and voted, but
there's a certain level of total sunshine blowing that goes on in every fan base.
Yes, there is.
It's just like, I like that Jeremy Pruitt, and he's a ball coach. Yeah, just give him time. There's some people who still support him, right?
But, yeah, but like I knew that when I asked this question, the fired option was going to win. I honestly thought it would be a much wider margin than it was. 47% say Pruitt needs to be fired, and 44% say Pruitt needs more time. So it's pretty even right now among Tennessee fans. Does that surprise you at all, given what's happened the last 5 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, especially given the forum, yes.
I mean, we all know Twitter is very level-headed.
Yeah, I just assume that it would be a lot more pitchforky. But
that's a good description.
Thank you. Yeah, a little bit surprising. So I don't know. Maybe it'll change today.
Maybe so. I had one response to the poll that said Greg Schiano is looking pretty good. I don't know about that.
He did. I mean, Harbaugh had to go to like triple overtime to beat him, which is, I don't know what that says about anybody. But yeah, maybe it's like Vols fans are just sick of the starting over and searching, starting over and searching. I mean, the only thing that I see from Vols fans as a solution here, because it's the only thing you can really grab onto right now, is Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
And if that's like, that's your golden child hire, then that's not, to me, that's not very encouraging.
Is there anybody else out there that you think could be an intriguing option for Tennessee? Let's say in the next year or two, because I still find it very unlikely they move on from Jeremy Pruitt after this year. And we've talked about Hugh Freeze. But is there anybody out there that catches your eye if you're a Tennessee fan that maybe you've got one eye on looking ahead to the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, Matt Campbell from Iowa State is a rising young coach who at some point is going to get a top, I think, Power 5 job. But I don't see him taking the job. I mean, I could be wrong. But, I mean, he's someone who comes to mind. Like I said, you know, like Jeff Brohm to me was – in that last search, that's where it's like, okay, you can see how that could work out, and he just didn't, you know, he didn't want the job. Jamie Chadwell, Coastal Carolina, is a guy you're going to hear about. Obviously, they're having this magical season. He's done well there. You know, I mean, it's coaches like that. I think you have to have a coach who has demonstrated the ability to be a head coach and have success. It's incredible that Tennessee would ever hire someone who doesn't have that. I mean, when, like, Johnny Majors came in with a national championship,
right?
You know,
what about Luke Fickell?
Would he take the job?
I don't think he would take the job. Probably I could be not. Wrong. I think Luke Fickell, I was going to say, is probably Ohio State or bust. Obviously, he's been Ohio State's coach for 1 year, but that was a tough, you know, the Tressel gets
tough
fired.
Situation.
And it's a tough spot. I mean, he turned down Michigan State, which is not as good a job as Tennessee, but it's still a pretty good top 25 Power 5 job.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth going after him. Like, that would be someone certainly worth going after. He's a Midwest guy. He's always recruited there. He played there. He's coached there. So I'd be surprised. But that would be, okay, if you can get him, yeah, you've just upgraded at the most important spot to upgrade.
I feel like Fickell would be more bound to go to, like, Michigan or Penn State if Harbaugh or Franklin get canned there.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he would go to Michigan.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Drew texts in and asks, Steve Sarkisian. What do you think of Steve Sarkisian to Tennessee? He's been a head coach before.
It's funny how, and I think he's obviously done a very good job, but it's funny how his image has been rehabilitated so quickly, I think, with just the ridiculousness of this offense, which I think is still a lot about the personnel on the field. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't all that impressive as a coach. Obviously, he's had his own issues, which and it's a great story that he appears to be past them. I just, as a head coach, I don't think he's really demonstrated anything that makes you that excited about. And if you're most excited because this Alabama offense is destroying everyone, I mean, all due respect to him, there's a lot of other OCs who could go in there and do the same thing.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, you forgot a fourth option in the poll. What percent wants Fulmer gone too? It's a little combo. Oh, Fulmer and Pruitt both out.
Well, he just got extended.
Yeah, Fulmer's not going anywhere.
Now, of course, Pruitt just got extended too. But Fulmer got extended.
Fulmer's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be the guy that brings in the next coach. If they have to make a move in the next year or two, Fulmer's going to get the opportunity to have a full coaching search under his belt. Because you got to remember, like, he didn't have that opportunity this time around. Like, Jeremy Pruitt, you can debate whether or not that was the hire to go with at the time, but the options were pretty scarce at the time. What'd you have, Mel Tucker and Jeremy Pruitt? Basically, at that point. So there wasn't much that Phil Fulmer could have done at that point. All the options were very slim.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was a disaster of a coaching search.
Right. He came in at the end and did what he could do. So I agree. Phil Fulmer will almost for sure hire the next head coach. It's just a matter of when that happens. Now, of course, maybe he won't because Jeremy Pruitt will figure it out and turn it around. And Philip Fulmer retires in a few years with Jeremy Pruitt still in place. For anybody who can extend their imagination to that point. It seems far-fetched now, all of a sudden.
Hibbs on Twitter tweets in, says, Freeze convinced A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf to come to Ole Miss, of all places. Bring him to me. A lot of love for Hugh Freeze with Tennessee fans.
The word convinced is one way to put it.
Yeah, that is one way to put it.
He gets players.
I mean, there was some convincing, I guess. Maybe some unconventional methods.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Things happen.
This league.
Yeah.
Okay.
When it all costs,
baby. This sport. You know, these things. It's just, again, how sloppy are you? That's the question for Hugh Freeze.
So Jeremy Pruitt had a press conference yesterday, his weekly Monday press conference, which at the time you thought the Vandy game was coming on Saturday. We've learned since then that it's not. But Jeremy Pruitt also revisited the game against Auburn and offered his thoughts on the offense. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say.
You know, after reviewing the game, I think I was pretty, you know, kind of spot on after the game. You know, just starting offensively, you know, I thought it was probably our best performance, especially up front. You know, I felt like we really kind of dominated the line of scrimmage there, created some explosive plays in the run game. I thought our backs ran extremely hard, and I thought our tight ends blocked well, and we blocked well on the perimeter. We created some explosive plays in the throw game. You know, we were better on third down. I thought we'd done a nice job getting –
in manageable third downs when we got behind the sticks a little bit. One of the biggest plays in the game is obviously the interception down there. We kind of dominated the drive going down through there and made a mistake, and which turned in for points for the other team.
So I thought one of the biggest plays of the game was the interception down there. Yeah, I'd probably say it was one of the biggest plays of the game. But also, look, I get what Pruitt is saying here. He's saying up front they ran the ball well against Auburn. They controlled the line of scrimmage for the most part. I understand what he is trying to say. And I don't know if he's necessarily wrong in what he's trying to say. But this goes back to, you got to be able to read the room a little bit. You can't walk out there in a press conference on Monday when you've lost five games in a row and you just put up 17 points against Auburn and call it your best offensive performance of the season. I mean, that is such an indictment on your offense. That's not something you can do on a Monday press conference. And as you may imagine, Tennessee fans saw that yesterday and said, yep, 17 points, our best offensive performance of the season. Sign me up, baby. Getting real excited about all that.
I like how Porth just sort of faded him out like an 80s rock song. You know, just, all right, just keep talking. Yeah, just shut him down.
Shut up, Jeremy. Okay.
But the thing is, he's probably right. And maybe that was his way of like just like a light little shade toward Jim Chaney. You know, yeah, that was our best offense of the season, guys.
Well, he had
offensively, the name of the game is scoring points.
Well, by that logic, they've scored more points in the game this year than 17.
Yes.
So it can't be their best offensive performance of the season.
Yeah. I guess who you play matters some. Decent defense,
I guess.
We've
discovered that it has mattered very much who they played.
You can run it every snap or you can throw it every snap, yeah. Right? It's my belief that you probably need to be able to do both.
And now, a startling revelation yesterday that the interception that ended up going 100 yards the other way was apparently a pretty big play in the game.
Hmm. He's not wrong.
He's not. Not at all.
These press conferences you're right,
you know? Are becoming pretty entertaining.
Is there going to be vol calls this week? I'm serious. Like, is that only during game week?
I don't know. I mean,
because I mean, I
look, there have been like 100 bye weeks already this week, so or this season, so I have to go back and look. But
I'm still,
there wasn't much of all calls last
week. I'm still bothered by that. Like, that to me is, man, you better let these people say what they got to say.
I can assure you that the gap is closing.
Jeremy Pruitt, man, the gift that keeps on giving.
Do we, like, in the studio, do you still have like a bunch of Butch drops? Like, are the archives full of Butch drops?
If I look hard enough,
you probably find some.
I can definitely find some.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do a little mashup, you know, a Butch, a little.
Just back
little
and forth.
Yeah. Maybe throw in it, like, sprinkle a dually in.
Yeah. I mean, what Tennessee fan wouldn't want to hear that? All three of those guys talking together. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bernard texts in, I can tell you, Fulmer will not be the one hiring the next football coach. That would be Randy Boyd and John Compton. They are successful, well-respected businessmen who are absolutely embarrassed. Not only did Fulmer bring Pruitt in, he gave him an extension and a 75% mitigation clause. I can promise you they are not letting Fulmer touch this with a 10-foot pole. Once they make a decision that they want Pruitt gone, you will see Fulmer start to distance himself from Pruitt. Fulmer is a political animal and a survivor. He will not go down with Pruitt.
Okay, so, but what's being said there is that Fulmer will technically have the hire, but he won't have actual say in it. Is that what you take from that? Yeah. So it's not like he's going to be gone, but he'll be powerless.
He will be guided.
I don't think Philip Fulmer, I hear you on the political animal stuff and everything, but I mean, at this point in his life, why does he have to deal with that crap? Okay, I'll just go golf again then.
Yeah.
I don't see Philip Fulmer being around to be a puppet AD, not actually choosing the coach, because then that's on his legacy. Why sign up for that?
Yeah, he didn't have to.
Nah. So he'll be out. If that's the situation, and we know
it could be.
Powerful people with money have a lot of say, have had a lot of say in a lot of these things that have happened going back to Fulmer being fired. Philip Fulmer's not going to be a puppet AD. I promise you that.
When we come back, a really interesting situation over the weekend in the ACC with Clemson and Florida State. And there's been a lot of barking back and forth since then. We'll react to that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, Joe, you have got a word from FanDuel, which I got to tell you, it was a great weekend for me in FanDuel. I bragged about it a couple times. But other than poor Cincinnati Bearcats, a great weekend for me in FanDuel. Joe, I turn it over to you.
That's good to know. Maybe not as good for me, but you know, the Bearcats, I'll get mad at the Bearcats later. But I would like to say what is good for me, and I hope for all of us, is that Thanksgiving is one of our favorite days of the year. I know for me, I can't wait to eat too much, watch football all day. And now that I can bet all the games on FanDuel Sportsbook, the day is even better. If you never bet on FanDuel before, now's a perfect time to give it a shot because you've got a 25-1 odds boost on any of the NFL games Thanksgiving Day. So you bet $5, you can win $125. Of course, we have the Texans against the mighty Detroit Lions, Washington football team and the Cowboys, and the Steelers-Ravens. Again, 25-1, any of those games. And you're going to love FanDuel. Offers like these are one of many reasons they're America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You got fast payouts. So download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up with the promo code WPRT so they know I sent you. FanDuel Sportsbook, WPRT. And you must be, of course, 21 or older and in the state of Tennessee. Terms apply. This has got messed up on me. Thank you. New users only. I knew there were some new rules here. New users only on this. You must wager on the designated boost market. Deposit required. Max bonus $125. See full terms sportsbook.fanduel.com for problem gambling support 800-889-9789.
We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. Let's quickly go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, please do an audio mashup of ex-Vols coaches as if they're having a conversation and giving each other coaching instructions. Oh. What a mashup that would be of Dooley, Butch Jones, and Jeremy Pruitt.
Got a homework assignment.
Yeah.
That could be pretty fun.
Got Dooley over there talking about Rommel.
Can you get some Lane Kiffin in there? Can Lane sneak in or no? Is
he part of the club here?
I mean, Lane is
a Pulse former club. He caused this whole mess.
Well, Lane's the guy everybody wishes never left and they could have back, right?
I mean, yeah, which is amazing to think about now, given how much hatred there was at the time with him leaving. I mean, you're talking about he had to get like police escort to get out of there.
Right.
So
burning couches.
Yeah, couches, mattresses, everything on fire in Knoxville. So the fact that they've circled back around, like even the last coaching search before Pruitt was hired, I mean, the big thing was, let's get Lane Kiffin back in there, which is amazing to think about in less than 10 years. It came back around like that.
It is unbelievable. But just wait, you know, if he gets Ole Miss going. And Lane can probably, you know, do some things that Hugh Freeze did at Ole Miss. You know, on a variety of fronts.
Oh, yeah.
He gets that thing rolling, you know, and Tennessee's still spinning its wheels in a few years, and there's really going to be a lot of Lane regret.
Yeah. So there has been an interesting development in the ACC. So Clemson goes down to Florida State on Saturday. They're ready to play the game, and it comes out that Clemson has had a player test positive for COVID-19 that made the trip with them. So Clemson put that player in quarantine. I think they even sent him back home once they discovered that he had tested positive for COVID-19. But that led to a big discussion before the game between Clemson's medical staff and Florida State's medical staff. And Florida State's medical staff ultimately made the decision that they didn't really feel comfortable moving forward with the game, and the game did not take place between Clemson and Florida State on Saturday. And that has led to a wild reaction ever since then, started by Clemson football coach Dabo Swinney. Here's what Dabo had to say about this whole situation that went down on Saturday at Florida State.
We offered to test again, play Saturday night, Sunday, Monday, and it was declined. We spent $300,000+ to travel. We set up a Ringling Brothers tent in the took over an entire parking lot to do what we have to do to meet the standards. We had people travel from all over the country to come to the game, to see the game. We met the standard to play, and we should have played. We have mitigated everything all year long. meetings, practices, meals, housing, how we travel. If the standard of play was zero positive tests, then we would have never had a season. This game was not canceled because of COVID. COVID was just an excuse to cancel the game. And to be honest with you, I don't think it has anything to do with their players. I have no doubt that their players wanted to play and would have played. And same with the coaches. To me, the Florida State administration forfeited the game. And if they want to play Clemson, in my opinion, they need to come to Clemson or they need to pay for all expenses. Other than that, there's no reason for us to play them. We were there, we were ready, and we met the standards.
So very strong words there by Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney directed at Florida State's administration, saying COVID was not why the game wasn't played. COVID was used as an excuse not to play this game on Saturday. What's your reaction to that, Joe, and the words there by Dabo Swinney?
I think Dabo is an idiot so often, and here he is again, being an idiot. That's my reaction.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, and look, this is there's not really a standard. I looked into this yesterday in the ACC. There's no, like, conference standard that they've really got. They've basically left it up to the individual institutions and their medical team. So if you have one medical team, which has nothing to do with the actual football program, if one of them is saying, yeah, it's cool to play, and that's Clemson's right, they have the right to say that. If you have Florida State's saying, no, we don't really feel comfortable with this, given what's happened, you just traveled here with a guy that had a positive COVID test, we're not comfortable playing the game, that's the policy the ACC has left out there. And if one team is not comfortable playing, that's basically the ACC has said they don't have to play. And that's what happened in this situation. It has nothing to do with Florida State's football team.
Yeah, I mean, like, so it sounds like at first he was sort of saying, you know, that the Florida State coaches just don't want to get beat 55-10 or whatever it would have been. I mean, it's a disgusting game that no one needs to watch. But then he's like, well, it's a – so then I don't know if he was backtracking or if he really thinks that just the administration told, like, the medical staff, yeah, just say you have a problem with it so we can get out of this game. It's just stupid. Shut up, Dabo. God.
And here is what Florida State head coach Mike Norvell had to say in response to Dabo Swinney.
There was an excitement about, you know, the week that had led up to the game and the opportunity that was in front of us. And, you know, we're competitors. And that is the reason why, you know, we have things set up the way that they're set up. You know, football coaches are not doctors. And some of us might think that that we are. But there's, you know, there's a reason why those advisors and are able to make the decisions.
I love the little dig in there by Mike Norvell of, yeah, some of us may think we're doctors, but we're not. That was nice in response there.
That was good, yeah. I just – Dabo is – he's like the least likable coach ever. He's like everybody – oh, Dabo, yeah.
I actually understand what you're saying there. That's good.
But he's actually – he grates on my – I think he says so much dumb crap all the time. And this is another – like, just shut up. It's just ridiculous.
But you know what's going to happen now. Like, if this game ends up getting played, Clemson is going to hang up like 75. Like, Dabo is going to use this, and they're going to be like, they never want to play us and all this stuff.
Right.
And Clemson will end up winning like 75-3.
Yeah. So
which they could have anyway.
Exactly.
But, I mean, Florida State wants to play the game. I mean, it's money. I mean, you're not just going to like, oh, it's Clemson. We're going to get killed. We're not going to play.
Yeah, if anything, it'd be the other way around. Like I totally understand Mike Norvell being like, well, okay, we'll get them next year.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, the administration, like, the bottom line of this is you want to play the game,
right?
Like, why would the administration interfere? Or because that's what the suggestion is. Like, he's suggesting that the medical people at Florida State are somehow not actually medical people,
right? They're like complicit with the administration. Yeah. They don't want the university to look bad or something,
right? Because it really the medical people really care. You know, like if their football team gets killed. It's just so – it's like, again, he thinks the world revolves around him. He thinks the world revolves around football. And sometimes he just – the real Dabo comes out and he's very unlikable.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans. Former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington will join us. We'll look back at the Ravens game and look ahead at a monumental matchup on Sunday against the Colts. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in former Titans wide receiver and co-host of Nate and TD, Nate Washington. Nate, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
Fellas, how y'all doing this morning, man? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's good. A pleasure to have you. Nate, I want to start with the Titans game against the Ravens, a dramatic win in overtime. Derrick Henry walks it off 30-24 on Sunday. What did that Titans win against the Ravens tell you about this group?
Jesus Christ, man. First of all, they sent me into extreme panic mode multiple times throughout that game. But, you know, this has just been indicative to what this team has been about this year. You know, they're going to play till the clock says zeros. They're going to give their all. This game, a game will never be over for them until it's over, you know, and it's just been going a lot similar to the other games. And Sunday was a test of time. I think they stuck with their game plan. You know, they did what they could. You know, I think throughout the duration of the game, you know, I think not only us as fans, but I'm sure there's some things that they would address differently. But, you know, throughout the game Sunday, it went exactly as I hoped it would. You know, I was hoping that Titans will pull off a tough win, but definitely going to be some things to address, but definitely going in the right direction.
As a receiver watching A.J. Brown bulldoze through half the Ravens' defense, Nate, what were your thoughts in that moment?
Man, well, you know, that's just what he does, man. A.J., he plays like almost like a tight end. Him and I've made mention to him and D.K., on our show on Friday nights, and their ability with their size is just natural, as you know. It's just to be able to wake up and be that big. You know, I'm pretty sure these guys put in tremendous work in the weight room, but, you know, that size alone with that will and that attitude is a tremendous attribute for a guy like AJ. He does such an awesome job of using his size, creating space after the run, taking the contact after the run, and doing – you know, amazing job of creating more yards. So just indicative of what he's been doing all year and his physical ability that he brings to the table. And, man, I mean, that play in itself, I was so excited about it that I really was kind of numb at the time that it happened because I was still upset about the run game at the time. But, man, that play in itself, you know, definitely is indicative to what A.J. Brown brings to the table, a big, fast guy that does an awesome job of playing through contact.
Nate, you brought up the run game there, and it was so much fun following along with your Twitter account on Sunday in the game because I felt like you and I and a lot of Titans fans were on the same wavelength. Like, Derrick Henry is out here just running through the Ravens defense in the second half. Do you feel like the Titans maybe sometimes are guilty of getting away from Derrick Henry on drives when they don't really need to?
Well, you know what? I talked about this as well on our Friday night show, and it's almost like it's very reminiscent of the Seattle Seahawks New England Patriots game where Pete Carroll just outthought himself, got away from Marshawn Lynch, and decided to throw the ball. It's exactly reminiscent of that situation. You get guys that are your workhorses, your Marshawn Lynch's, your Adrian Peterson's, and now here it is, we have a Derrick Henry. And a lot of these coaches, they get into a think tanks where they outthink themselves. And instead of just sticking to the script of what they do so well a lot of times, I think, you know, they're so afraid, the offensive coordinators are so afraid that these teams are going to prepare to stop their, you know, their joker in their hand to make sure that they try to take that one trick out of that offensive playbook, you know, establishment that will get them over. And a lot of times they try to go for that priority that the offense has, which is Derrick Henry. But, you know, in this situation, I just felt like Sunday, it was just, you know, no matter what they did, I didn't feel like they were going to be able to stop it. I felt like the longevity of the physical run game throughout the duration of the game would definitely hurt the Baltimore Ravens. And I think, you know, at times that we just outthought ourselves. Art just caught a play action. And I understand it's a difficult situation being in that box and calling those plays. But at the same time, when it's working, don't stop. You know, just continue to go, press the issue, be unapologetic about it. I also mentioned this on me and TD show, just being unapologetic about your operation and what you do best. And that's what the Titans do. They do best at running the game, running the ball, doing that throughout the game, wearing the defense down, and making sure that by the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, the team doesn't play anymore, doesn't want to play anymore. And I just seen the Baltimore Ravens ready to tap out a long time ago, but it was almost like the Titans were helping them out and calling play action, or there was a mishap there or a mishap here on a screen. And I just was like, man, finish the drives with these physical runs. If anything, they're going to be going out there next series prepared to try to stop you again, thinking in the back of their minds that they don't want to be out there and will give up everything. So I think in the end, it just showed off. Obviously, Derrick was able to do what he did in the overtime run and seal the game for the Titans. But definitely, I think I'll tweet for everybody when I say that game could have been over a long time ago.
So, Nate, what do you make of the Titans' defensive effort Sunday? Do you see – I know it's a different kind of matchup, but do you see some things coming together other than health, obviously, because both sides of the ball are getting worse and worse there. But do you see some progress?
Definitely seeing some progress. I'm seeing some fight on the back end, some attitude. Even, you know, I think I've also spoke about Malcolm Butler and knowing him personally and knowing that, you know, especially as a defensive back, you're going to have to be okay with being beat every now and again, but still remaining with extreme confidence. And I knew Malcolm would be able to accomplish that, but, you know, to see this guy borders on the other side, you know, to see his ability coming along and his confidence starting to build and him being able to make plays on the ball, make plays on the receiver and split seconds to create, you know, separation of the ball or getting pass breakups and those things, to see that confidence coming along from the other side where, you know, unfortunately, the issue with Jonathan Joseph didn't work out, you know, kind of a question mark in the air of what Desmond King was going to be able to do when he came in. But, you know, them remaining to a specific slot or nickelback responsibility for Desmond is giving Borders an opportunity to play here. And he's been stepping up and making some plays. So it's been coming along. You know, I think a lot of the things that were in question just about the competitive nature of what the secondary brought to the table is definitely increasing and becoming better. But obviously this front seven, you know, the size of what Jeffrey has been able to do on a consistent basis, Harold's ability to now make his flash plays throughout this year of his career, and see a couple other guys be able to get pressure on the quarterback. You know, I would still love to see the full potential come through and increase. But obviously, definitely, I can see the defense becoming better, becoming more in sync, understanding what, you know, the defensive coordinator, Bowden is trying to accomplish and trying to play more with continuity. I think it's going to have to be a trust factor with all of the interchanging guys coming out due to injuries. But obviously, with a coach like Coach Vrabel and a no-nonsense of understanding that when you're in there, you're going to have to get your job done, I believe that, you know, it's all about strategy and understanding what you want to get done as a defense and not who's necessarily in that spot. You know, these guys are professionals. They're going to do what they can to make sure that they're fulfilling their role. But I just see a better continuity and a better competitive nature coming from this team on the defensive side of the ball. And at the end of the day, you know, as a former player, as a now fan, I think that's pretty much all you can ask for in this situation due to, you know, obviously COVID protocols and all those things going on. You know, I understand it's going to be interchanging bodies with injuries, but more than all, being a fan, I want to see competitive nature. I want to see guys that are going to go out and compete and have an attitude and a will to win, and I'm starting to see that on the defensive side of the ball.
Former Titans wide receiver and co-host of Nate and TD, Nate Washington on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Nate, Titans now 7-3, obviously a huge game coming up on Sunday against the Colts. It didn't go their way against Indy a couple of weeks ago. What do you make of this matchup on Sunday against the Colts, and do you think the Titans can get their revenge in this game?
Definitely. Next Thursday will be interesting. This is one thing I'll say. You know, we've, even from back during the days of playing, we've always, as an organization, in my opinion, have had issues with playing the Colts. We play the Texans well. We've had split years with them. We've had split years with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But the Colts are a very disciplined, well-rounded team, and they've always been that way, from their offense to their defense to their special teams. They play a full 60-minute game. It's going to be difficult to beat a team like that, but definitely they are capable of being beat, you know. And as a team, you just have to go out there with the focus that, you know, correcting the mistakes that you've had in the past with this team is going to be imperative. They come out and they understand, you know, what they've done against you in the past, where they failed, and they try to address those issues. And they do a pretty good job as an organization in addressing those issues. And I feel like, you know, the Titans are going to have an opportunity here next Thursday to, you know, get a split decision here throughout the season and make it a tough AFC South with winning the whole division, if they can do what they're capable of, you know, being strategic about their approach offensively, understanding their weaknesses and what this coach offense is strength of what they're able to accomplish. They're a quick pass team. They do a good job of running the ball, which is a lot of, you know, the Titans defense weakness, you know. But I also feel like that this is something that the Titans defense can approach. And when it comes down to special teams, it's definitely just going to have to come down to a will to and a discipline for the Titans, because, you know, this is also a very well-structured coach team, as I stated, and they play well on all three phases. So definitely an opportunity for the Titans to come out and play some good ball. But, you know, this is an organization and a coach that we as an organization and the Titans have struggled with tremendously throughout the year, just trying to play a full, well-disciplined 60-minute game and understanding, you know, it may not be a rival, you know, nationally throughout the NFL and recognized, but this is definitely a situation, especially here of late, as far as the Titans organization goes and how well they've been playing throughout, you know, the end of seasons and making it to postseasons here these last couple of seasons. This is a huge game, you know, facing this organization and the Colts. It's a huge hurdle for the Titans to get over, and they're definitely going to have to address some huge elephants in the room if they're going to have to do that, because, you know, this is an opportunity that they can't pass, and it's available for them if they correct all the issues that they've had.
Former Titans wide receiver and co-host of Nate and TD, Nate Washington, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Nate, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. Anytime.
Absolutely. Nate. Great stuff there from Nate Washington, and he brought it up. It's what Ryan Porth was talking about a couple weeks ago. The Colts have been a struggle for the Titans. Nate Washington has seen it firsthand, and now as good a time as ever to start to reverse that trend a little bit heading into this game against Indy on Sunday.
Ryan Porth believes. Look at him. He believes. I can see it.
We'll get to that later in the week.
Okay.
We'll get to that. Nate was on that team that lost to Dan Orlovsky in the Colts when the Colts were winless. One of many chapters within this matchup that went the Colts' way.
Why didn't we bring that up when Orlovsky was on?
We should have. When he comes on again, we'll talk about it with him.
I wonder if that's still like a warm memory for
Take us through that game where you just – what did he throw for that in that game? Like 87 yards and he beat the Titans?
Is that what it was?
It was not much more than that. It was like 112 yards or something. Pretty crazy.
Donald Brown ran for like 220 in that game for the Colts.
The Donald Brown.
I'm probably exaggerating, but it certainly felt like it.
It was all over the place.
Wow.
When we come back, Titans got some decisions to make this offseason in terms of some contracts they're going to hand out. Why there's one guy I think has to be a priority heading into this offseason. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is a matchup between Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, taking on Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Joe, John Robinson and Tennessee Titans, they're going to have some interesting decisions to make this offseason. We know Jonnu Smith's contract is coming up. Jayon Brown's contract is coming up. And we also know that the Titans did not pick up the fifth-year option for Corey Davis. Now, I don't think anybody can really blame them for doing that, given where Corey Davis was drafted, the money slotted to him, if they would have done that. But I think the more you watch him play this year, the more it's clear that the Titans have a pretty good 1-2 punch in A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Corey Davis, 39 catches on the year so far, 549 yards and 3 touchdowns. Had another big game on Sunday against the Ravens, 5 catches for 113 yards. And Corey Davis has gone over the 100-yard mark 3 times already this season. So having a pretty good season so far. How much of a priority should locking down Corey Davis and making sure he's under contract with the Titans next year be for John Robinson and the Titans, given all the decisions they're going to have to make and maybe the money that they're going to have to throw out there to Jonnu Smith and Jayon Brown?
Yeah, it's a priority, but it's a really tricky. The whole picture is tricky because you just mentioned two guys who are very important. It would be interesting to actually rank those guys. I think I might rank Jonnu Smith first in terms of if you're just talking about who's most important to try to, you know, retain long term and pay more money to, you know, with different situations with all of them. But I think I would put Jonnu Smith first. I still might put Corey Davis third, but boy, he's moving up the list of important guys. I agree. I mean, he's played really well. He's at this point very likely to have, you know, his best season. I mean, he's almost surpassed last season in half of the time. So 15 games he played last year, 43 for 601. He's played 8 games this year. He's 39 for 549. He's just about what he did all of last year, and he's on pace to beat that 2018 season when he had 65 for 891. He's still right around, you know, 14-1 per catch, 3 touchdowns. He's just, I feel like he's just a more consistent player. And certainly, I think he's a guy who is going to naturally benefit from A.J. Brown being on the team, and he's going to naturally benefit from Derrick Henry being on the team. And so you take that into account. Corey Davis is going to have good matchup situations and compared to earlier in his career, right? I mean, I think it's quite different now than earlier in his career. That 2017 offense, his rookie year, I mean, they needed any kind of weapon. Derrick Henry hadn't figured it out yet, right? That was a stodgy offense. And then 2018, they were kind of all over the place. The last half of last year and now this year, it is an offense that if you're that guy in his spot, you should benefit. And he is, but he's taking advantage of it. You got to give him credit.
You do, and I think, you know, you've got to get it out of your head if you're a Titans fan about where he was picked, because I understand that's important. And look, he's not lived up to being the number 5 overall pick. That's fine. That doesn't mean you're not a good player. And I don't think Corey Davis is the number one wide receiver in the NFL. I think he's a pretty darn good number 2, and I think he's shown that this year. That tandem they've got with A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Like, how long have the Titans been trying to find receivers that can play and can make a difference in the game? They've got 2 of them right now playing pretty well. And Adam Humphries, I mean, as a number 3 when he's healthy, this receiving core is as good as it's been in a long time. Corey Davis is a big part of that. So if you were to lose that next year and don't have Corey Davis on the other side, we've seen it. It can be a struggle to find a guy that can be as productive as Corey Davis has been this season. And A.J. Brown, I think, would suffer because of it a little bit, not having Corey Davis on the other side.
Well, and you are certainly welcome to laugh at this, but his blocking does matter to them.
Yeah.
To this offense, it matters. I mean, there's got to be a way out there to assign, you know, some yardage from Derrick Henry to particular blocks of his downfield. There's been some runs that went longer because of him. And, hey, look, they care about that in this offense. Also, they obviously care about personalities and having a good locker room, and Corey Davis is certainly a contributor to that, a positive contributor to that. And, yeah, so he won't live up to number 5, but he's developed into a really nice player. The question for Corey Davis is, I think a lot of times guys don't have their option picked up, and then it's like, well, they're going to be somewhere
right
else. They're, you know, I mean, that's sort of a smack in the face. Some guys are like, fine, well, I'll be elsewhere. I don't think it's like that. I think Corey Davis understands $15.7 million for 2021 was not going to be something that the Titans, you know, were interested in paying. And I don't think he has illusions about earning that. But I think if you're Corey Davis having this kind of year, I think the question is not whether, you know, you're just resolved to leave, but whether what could you do on the open market?
Yeah.
I mean, if you get to a 1,000-yard season here and you keep playing the way you're playing, I mean, you've got to see the appeal in getting to the open market. That's where guys really make money.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, Jonnu Smith leads the NFL in touchdown receptions for tight ends. Jayon Brown, maybe. And Corey Davis has to win a playoff game before I pay him.
Has to win a playoff game? Was he Wildcat quarterback? Catch a Derrick Henry Wildcat pass.
It's a beautiful play. He's won some playoff games.
Yeah, what do you mean? He caught a touchdown pass in a win at Baltimore.
Do you mean like being like the dominating force in a playoff game?
He has to have the winning touchdown?
Yeah.
That's some high standards for a number two receiver.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben text in, I don't think the offseason players will matter as much until we know if we're going to lose Arthur and get a defensive coordinator. So I guess the future of the coaching staff determines what Ben views the offseason importance being there.
Players league, man. It is a players league. AJ Brown made Arthur Smith look good with that little goal line possession the other day, didn't he?
He did.
Where they have second and two, they get blown up on a snap, and it's like, well, AJ saved the day. He did. Players.
Carry seven people into the end zone.
I mean, Arthur Smith's a good OC, and I think there's a good chance he'll be a head coach somewhere. That doesn't condemn this offense next year if they have, you know, a healthy offensive line and these skill guys.
Yeah.
I bet you they're good. Now, I agree. The D coordinator thing, that's going to have to be addressed.
It's interesting to look at Corey Davis, though, on the open market, because we know it's going to be an interesting year on the open market with COVID and the salary cap restrictions that teams are going to be under. Like, it's not a great year to be a free agent. Just like this past offseason wasn't a great year to be a free agent, this one's not going to be any different. I think that helps the Titans in terms of this is obviously a system Corey Davis is familiar with. I would say he's pretty comfortable here. This could be a situation where Corey Davis sticks with what he knows and you get another couple years of a great number two wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah. No, I think there's a good chance of that, you know, for sure. And you're right. It's not a vintage year of be a free agent. There's still, like, you know, being a free agent still is going to get you paid if you perform. But, you know, the cap going where it is, not ideal. So the timing isn't great for people who are coming. But still, if you come into this and you go on the market, I think Corey Davis, if he keeps playing like this, can find someone. To your point, though, how much does he like it here? How much does he believe that the way it's all set up is helping him have success? I think that's all. I think there's a real possibility this could be one of those decline the option and still get to sign the guy to a different, lower long-term deal, and you don't see it a lot in this league.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, I want to see Corey Davis in Seattle playing with DK Metcalf. What a trio that would be. Lockett, Metcalf, Corey Davis.
Just switch Ole Miss partners.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'd say a lot of guys would look good. Good there. Corey has been a good player. I mean, again, the number five thing will always probably follow him, and it was too high. But he has it's really, I think, nagging injuries have been a big part of his story. But he has plugged along and gotten better. I don't think there's any question about that he's improved. And he's to the point now where I'm trying to think of the last drop. If you go by Pro Football Reference, his catch percentage this year, 70.9%. That's, you know, of targets. So that's not drops. It's not like he's dropping 30, but it's targets that become catches. His first three years, it was 52.3, 58.0, and 62.3, and he's up to 70.9 this year. Now, some of that also could be the quarterback being more accurate, but I can't remember the last time Corey Davis dropped a pass. I'm sure it's happened this year.
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, the game Sunday, it seemed like that dude caught everything in a 8-foot radius of him. I mean, everything Ryan Tannehill threw over there, it seemed like Corey Davis was coming down with.
There was one on the sideline, and it was like right in front of me that it was a very difficult pass to catch, and he came up with it. So, yeah, he's running well. I mean, he looks fast out there.
Yeah.
You know, running away from guys, running through guys. It's been a really nice year for him.
When we come back, we'll revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. You've got one drive to win a game, and you can have Eddie George, CJ2K, or Derrick Henry in their prime. Which running back are you going with? Let's get your reaction. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 1025 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.